good to be back learning with everyone. Thank you for having us. And I hope everyone's Pesach was very nice. So I want to talk a little bit about Sfirat HaOmer, Sfirat HaOmer. Super fancy just very simple ideas, simple, important ideas that I think are more reminders than they are new insights. It's like the famous work of the Mesilas Yesharim of the Ramchal. Moshe Chaim Lutzato is considered, the Mesilas Yesharim is considered maybe the most important it's like the classic ethical Musar text in Judaism. And he starts in his introduction saying that everything in his book are things that people know. There's nothing in here that someone doesn't know, which isn't really true, but he writes about himself. There's nothing in here that people don't know, but these are things that we need to learn over and over again just to remind ourselves, not to learn things anew, but to sort of refresh our mindset and our focus on proper attitudes and proper values and proper work ethic, etc. So this year also is of that nature. I think it's, hopefully maybe there'll be some insights along the way, but it's really more of a refresher just to get our mindset in the right place. So I want to talk a little about Sfirat HaOmer, and let's start with the basics. What do you think of when you think of Sfirat HaOmer? What comes to mind when you think of Sfirat HaOmer? What does the time period connote to you? Maybe my unkept beard, right? Anyone, what comes to mind when you think of Sfirat HaOmer?
Remembering to count,
right?
Rabbi Akiva's
Talmidim. Good. You want to just elaborate on that for a second? Well, I don't want to take you from your suit.
Who's eating dinner?
Can you bring for everyone next time?
So 12,000 pair of his Talmidim died between from Begas Pesach to Shavuos, and it stopped at Lag BaOmer.
Right. Okay. Good. So basically, I think what many of us think of is a time of mourning, almost a time of sadness. Right. Don't listen to music. Right, don't shave. I mean, all these things. There's exceptions. There's different situations. But I'm saying, in a general sense. So it's in a sense, it's a time of sadness, which is interesting because that's not really what it is on a Torah level. It's not really what it seems to be. But as Mark said, that's a story that happened in history, which I want to look at now. If you look at source number one, the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos, source number one, Amru, they said, who's they? I don't know. People of the time. Shneim asar elef zugim talmidim hayu lo l'Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. It's interesting to note it's 12,000 pairs, not 24,000 people. So that's already interesting. Migavas ad on Tifras, the different people, it's different names. They had interesting names back then. V'kulan mesu v'perek echa, they would think we have interesting names. V'kulan mesu v'perek echa, they all died in one time period. Mipnei shelo nahagu kavod zel lazeh, because they didn't treat each other with respect. They didn't treat each other properly. V'haya ha'olam shamim, and the world was desecrated. Ad shabar Rabbi Akiva, Eitzer Rabbi Sein Shabidarim, until Rabbi Akiva went to the north. V'shana lehem Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and he found new students, and he started teaching all over again. Okay, so if you look at the very end of the Gemara, in the last line, Tana, it says, Kula meis mi Pesach v'atzeres. They died during this time period of Pesach to Atzeres. Atzeres is another word for Shavuos. It's what the Torah actually calls Shavuos. So from Pesach until Shavuos, during this time period of Sfirat HaOmer, and our tradition is that they actually stopped dying on Lag BaOmer. So that's why our mourning period goes until Lag BaOmer. So that's what we are all familiar with, as this is a time of mourning, a time of sadness of Sfirat HaOmer because of this tragedy that occurred. And now it's very interesting. Yeah.
But Sfirat HaOmer predates.
Okay, good. So that's very interesting because Sfirat HaOmer actually comes way before that. It actually comes in the Torah. What's Sfirat HaOmer about in the Torah? Anyone know? What's going on in Sfirat HaOmer in the Torah?
He's just
counting up to?
Torah.
To Kabbalah's Torah. Does it say in the Torah that Shavuos is Kabbalah's Torah? No, it actually doesn't. It's fascinating. We think of Shavuos as what? As when we get the Torah, right? Torah. What do we say in davening? Shavuos is man, matan, Torah, teinu. It's when we get the Torah. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Torah. I mean, it comes out that's true in terms of dates. If you figure out and you calculate the dates, it ends up being that Shavuos is Matan Torah, although it actually might be one day off, which is a whole different interesting issue. But it comes out that Shavuos is at least around the time, if not the exact time, of Matan Torah. But the Torah doesn't tell us that explicitly. And in the Torah, what is Shavuos about? Or let's go back a step. What's Sfirat HaOmer about in the Torah itself? Anyone know? The harvest, yeah. Agriculture, yeah, exactly. Very good. It's we harvest the first crops, the first grains, and we bring a korban on the second day of Pesach. It's called the korban Omer, and then we count until we bring a new korban with the first fruits, which is called the korban towards Shtei Alechem. It's the korban that we bring on Shavuos, the two loaves of bread, but it's the Bikurim, it's the first fruit. So that's what it is, that's what Shavuos and Sfira is in the Torah, which is interesting. Okay, in Chazal, in our dominant rabbinic tradition, what is Sfira about and what is Shavuos about? It's what you said. It's about getting the Torah. That's what we usually focus on. So we actually have these three different things going on in this time period. So let's just recap what we have. Okay, if you look historically at the Gemara and at the minhag that has become the pervasive minhag of all of Klal Yisrael, and we know that the Gemara tells us, and many Hasidic works focus on this a lot, and Halacha really adopts this, that there's a concept called minhag Yisrael Torahi, that the custom of the Jewish people, that teaches us Torah. What has become the pervasive minhag, what has become the custom, that tells you what Hashem's intention for what should develop in Jewish ritual, Jewish culture, Jewish tradition should be. So it has become the pervasive minhag that this time period is a time period, in a sense, in one sense, of sadness, of these different customs that we have, not to get married during this time period, not to shave, not to listen to music, etc. That's one thing that's going on. And that's connected to Rabbi Akiva's students, yeah.
So before that, none of this was observed.
Before Rabbi Akiva's students?
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh.
None of this, yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, there certainly have been many, many major tragedies over the course of Jewish history,
mm-hmm.
that in different time periods of the year. So why did this tragedy become, the minhag that stuck, that we observe this time period,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to any other tragic time?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, so I want to try and get back to that. So the first layer we have of what's going on during this time period is this aspect, the tragedy. Yeah, I'm going to get back to that. It's a great question. Is this layer of things, is the historical, is what happened during this time period, the sadness, the lack of treating each other properly of Rabbi Akiva's students. Okay, and the Shulchan Aruch brings this down. This is something that's, it's a real legitimate conclusion that the halachic tradition has come to, that we treat this period in that way. Second layer we pointed out is in the Torah itself. If you go back before any of this happened, like you said, in the Torah itself, what is this time period? It's celebrating agricultural success. It's celebrating different things that have happened in the cycle of farmers' lives, etc. Okay, and the third layer of what's going on here is, as we usually focus on, is the Torah, is Matan Torah, is when Hashem gave us the Torah. So we leave Egypt at Pesach, and we're counting until we get the Torah. And we're very excited for that. So I want to leave out the agricultural piece for a minute, and I want to leave aside, although there's some really fascinating questions, if anyone wants to know where to look into this more, I'm happy to point you to some really interesting stuff. But I want to leave aside for our discussion tonight the question of why the Torah itself doesn't tell us about Matan Torah by Shavuos. Why does the Torah not tell us that Shavuos is a celebration of getting the Torah? That's a really important question, but I want to put that on the side. I want to bracket that. That's not what we're going to focus on. What I want to focus on is, what is the connection between the time period of Shavuos as the time of getting the Torah, the time period of Sfira as leading up to getting the Torah and Shavuos? What's the connection between that and this historical story of Rabbi Akiva's students dying and turning this time period into a period of a certain level of sadness? That's the question I want to focus on. Everyone clear on what just happened here? It's three different levels of things. What's the connection between two of them? Shavuos and Sfira as leading up to the Torah, and Sfira as the time period of mourning for the death of Rabbi Akiva's students and their lack of treating each other properly. Anyone have any suggestions what the connection between those things might be?
Sure.
Please.
I mean, I think it was Rabbi Akiva said, Pachturecha Kamocha is all that matters. And that's Torah. I think it's commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we just read, that was lacking among the students of Rabbi Akiva.
Right. So therefore...
So that's the connection between the lack and Torah.
Mm-hmm. Good. So why should that?
Maybe that's why it's actually so significant, because it's in contrast.
Right. Meaning you can't actually get ready, you can't be ready to receive the Torah if you don't first have
the ability to, you lack the ability to have compassion and human, decency and respect for people.
So good. So I want to take that step further with exactly that, because
you can't. Yeah. Right. You can't. I mean, you can't. You can't be you know, like you said, you can't be, if you can't be a mensch first and treat people properly. Then
what's the point of it?
Then you're right. Then you, then exactly, you can't do anything. You
good. So here, so here's my question, which I think is a fascinating question. So I agree wholeheartedly with that. But what I think is what I think is interesting, I don't always, but what I think is interesting to think about is that it comes before the Torah. Because if you focus in on Rabbi Akiva's statement, which you just referenced, Rabbi Akiva says, and it's interesting to point out Rabbi Akiva, as you pointed out, Rabbi Akiva is the same person who had the students who didn't treat each other properly. And I wonder if Rabbi Akiva said the statement of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that loving your neighbor like yourself, Zeklal gadol b'Torah, this is the underlying principle of the entire Torah. Did he say that before his students died, or was that his response to his students dying? Something interesting to think about.
Because
because
what's amazing, if Rabbi Akiva's right, you have to l'recha kamocha, Zeklal gadol b'Torah. I mean, listen, you know that, you know, normally Talmidim take from their rebbe's.
Right.
You know, I mean, what the rebbe says, you know, you're a masmid of a certain derech of a certain way, whatever the Rebbe is, whatever the Rebbe is doing. So it seems kind of crazy that
this is what they fell on.
That out of all of the Rebbe Akiva was v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, right?
Mm-hmm.
That his students were the ones that 20, you know, they didn't do it.
100%. So that's why I wonder, was that his response to what just happened? So I haven't had a chance to look into if anyone discusses historically in the Gemara when the different pieces were from. It would be really interesting to look into. Yeah.
Rabbi Engel gave a shiur last week, and he said something about that there might have been, that he read somewhere, there might have been, and of course I can't quote who he said, mm-hmm. said this, that maybe Rabbi Akiva didn't talk about somebody on his level, on Rabbi Akiva's level, mm-hmm. in a possibly disparaging way.
Sorry, say that again?
So, in other words, this conundrum, why Rabbi Akiva's students, possibly comes from something that Rabbi Akiva did himself.
Uh-huh.
That he might have talked disparagingly about somebody, mm-hmm. some other...
So they learned from that, and that negatively, unfortunately. Negatively. And then maybe this was his response. Maybe this is the lesson he learned.
Right.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It's speculation, at least for me at this point. But it's interesting.
Listen, this is only tough. Life challenge.
Yes, Rabbi Akiva was the relentless optimist. Something I actually want to speak about another time is what Lag BaOmer is all about. Maybe next week. We'll see. But so what I want to push on to focus in on that idea of saying that the reason why there's a connection between Rabbi Akiva's students dying and preparation for Matan Torah is because Rabbi Akiva taught us that in order to have Torah, in order to prepare for Torah, in order to be Mekayim, to fulfill the Torah, you need to be able to treat people properly. If you don't have that, you don't have the Torah. Good. But what I want to key in on is that I would have said that Rabbi Akiva is saying that is the principle of the Torah. I would think that means we learn that from the Torah. So before we get the Torah, why is it now before we get the Torah that we're focusing on this? Meaning, Zeklal Gadol BaTorah, this is the principle of the Torah. So this is one of the things we learn from the Torah. So maybe we should mourn this after Shavuos, after we receive the Torah, and we didn't fulfill the Torah. But shouldn't it be, I mean, the sequence should be, logically, it should be that the fair time to be sort of reprimanded or punished or to focus on this lack should be after the Torah. This is one of the teachings of the Torah. This is the Klal Gadol BaTorah. We get this from the Torah. So it should be, why is this the preparation for the Torah? It should be postscript, or it should be the follow-up to when we got the Torah and we didn't fulfill it. So good, you're right, meaning we didn't fulfill the Torah, but that's from the Torah, not before the Torah. Why is this preceding the Torah? I think I saw him.
That's assuming we shouldn't have to prepare at all. But I think we do need to prepare. We need to prepare every year to remind us.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we read the same Torah over and over and over. We continually do the same things over and over. I think we need to put ourselves in a state of mind that this is the basis of everything that we're going to gain from the Torah. So let's get there first. And then it's easier to receive it. It's almost like he's like gifting us with this concept that if we can just get us to that point, then everything else is easy to receive when you get the Torah.
Okay, good. So I think similar to what you're saying, I actually want to circle back to a phrase Mark said before, which is what I think the answer is, and it's not in anything contradictory. It's just, in my mind, fills in the gaps. There's a phrase that I'm sure many people are familiar with, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. That Derech Eretz, the way we treat people, the way we function in the world, what you might call natural morality, in a philosophical sense, but it's just the basic human decency, being a good and honest and caring and kind person, that is kadma l'Torah, that becomes before the Torah. And I think that's the key here, is that this is specifically before Matan Torah, it's specifically in the days of preparation for the Torah, specifically in the days of preparation for the Torah, because Derech Eretz treating people with kavod, as Rabbi Akiva students unfortunately did not do, treating people respectfully, that is something that is a prerequisite for the Torah. And if you don't have that, you can't get to the Torah in the first place. And I want to credit, let's just look at source number 4, in Vayikra Rabba, which is the Medrash where this phrase actually originates from. Damar of Yishmael, if you look at source number 4, Damar of Yishmael bar of Nachman, Esrim v'shisha doros kadma derech eretz es ha-Torah. It's a fascinating thing. When the Torah did the Torah, in the Torah's own recording of history, when did the Torah come in to the Torah? What stage? I don't know if I'm making sense in the way I'm formulating this question. But what stage in the Torah, in the books of the Torah, does the Torah itself come into the history of the Torah? The beginning, the middle, the end?
26th generation.
Yeah, it's not so soon, right? It doesn't come in so quickly. It's 26 generations of mankind since God creates the world until the Torah is actually given, until Har Sinai, which is fascinating. I would have thought it should be the beginning.
Right, but that also also said that the Avos, even though they didn't get the Torah, but they practiced what was in the
Torah. So that's a really fascinating topic in its own right. But
see, yeah, but common sense is common sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, that's what I'm saying to you. If you know, I mean, everybody would agree that a person should be treat people fairly.
Right.
So saying that you should be, because I didn't know. That's not an answer.
I think everyone agrees with that.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. I think everyone agrees with that.
What?
That everyone doesn't agree that you should treat people fairly. People
should be selfish.
No one doesn't agree. Yeah.
Okay, so the idea being that the Medrash picks up on this point of the fact that the Torah has 26 generations, that's a very long time, before we actually get to the Torah, until we get to Matan Torah, to get to what we think of as Shavuos, 26 generations in the Torah, and why is there so much time before then? To teach us that there's something that has to come before the Torah. There's something that has to come before Mitzvahs. This is a radical idea. There's something that has to come first, and that's a basic decency. And the Torah has to come on top of that. And I learned something. I was telling over the idea of this year to my chavrus, Rabbi Shmuel Oren, and he showed me this source in the Vilna Gaon, in the Gra, that I personally find frightening. I think it's intuitive, and it's something that I would agree with easily and naturally, but at the same time, there's something radical about it to me, and it's actually deeply frightening to me. So if you look at source number 5, let's learn it together. And I want to credit Rabbi Oren with this source. I was not aware of this this amazing, amazing piece from the Gra. He says, Inyan HaTorah LeNefesh, source number 5, the idea of the Torah, the relationship, let's say, between the Torah and a person's soul, a person's character, Dugmas HaMatar LaAretz, is just like dew or rain to the ground. Okay, the way that Torah comes to us as people is just like rain falling on the earth. Shematzmiach ma shenizraba. It grows, it cultivates what is planted there. Vihi ha'ikr v'hasi, sorry, I went too long. Sam ha'chaim o sam ha'mavis. The Torah could either be the drink of life or it could be a poison of death. Kein ha'torah matzmiach ma shebelibo. So too the Torah, it grows, it cultivates, it nourishes what is in your heart already. Im libo tov, if your heart is good, if you're pointed in the right direction, tagdil your aso, it will increase, and it'll bolster you in that direction. The im belibo shoresh pora rosh v'la'ana, yigdal hatina belibo. And if in your heart is a selfishness, a lack of care for anything of significance, of anything of importance, then it'll allow you to continue in that direction, and it'll actually strengthen you in that direction. Kisha kosov, as the pasuk says in Hosea, tzadikim yelchu bam, righteous people will walk bam with the laws of the Torah. Uposhlim yikashlu bam, and people who are sinners will stumble over the Torah. Al kain, therefore, and he says something very powerful here, a powerful in a practical sense. This is a practice to try and actually adopt. Al kein, therefore, tzarech lipanos libo b'chol yom kodem halimur. You have to empty your heart before you learn, before you study Torah. V'acharav, and after you finish studying Torah, me ipush hadeos v'hamidos, from the sort of rotting or the spoiled negative ways that we think and negative character traits that we might have. Be'yiras chet u'masim tovim, with fear of sin, with fear of heaven, and masim tovim, and good deeds. This is anyone else, what reactions to this? I mean, I personally find this very frightening.
Well, what you're saying is that the Gra is saying that, you know, I mean, I've always been under the impression that Torah is to assist you in refining your character. But you seem to be saying that in this context, he's saying it can refine your character. But if you're negative to begin with, it's just going to help you become more negative.
Yeah.
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, so to a degree, that's exactly what he's saying. And I personally find this deeply frightening. Because to me, what he's saying is, if I'm not working on myself, if I'm not trying to be in the right place on my own, then I can't expect just learning Torah and doing the mitzvos and going through the motions to actually refine me and to make me a better person. I think we often, at least I often think, that the way we talk about Torah and learning Torah, at least I remember from the days in yeshiva, we talk about learning Torah, learn, and you'll become a good person. You know, learn Torah, that's where, you know, go to the base medrash and you'll become a good person. You'll become a better person. Torah teaches us how to be good people, and that's true. But what the Gra is saying is that it's true to an extent. If you haven't figured out how to at least be in the right mindset, to be trying to be in the right place, then the Torah is not going to be able to help you.
I mean,
it can actually potentially hurt you.
If you're not the other way of reading it maybe perhaps is, if you're not doing the work on yourself, you know, that's the prerequisite. I mean, actually, that tells very well with the Sefirot Omer, because you have to be open to doing your personal work. You can't just look at it as, just don't assume scholarship's going to make you a better person. Scholarship's not going to make you a better person. The study together with an eye towards, you know, changing yourself is what will make you a better person.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, two things are really interesting about that. One is, probably what's the most frightening thing is, we tend to think of Judaism as being much more mitzvah and action-centric. And somehow the idea that you could be so immersed in it, and the actions which, even if you don't necessarily have the right intent, you think that they're leading to good, that somehow that could you know, go in the wrong direction so dramatically, is pretty frightening.
Yeah.
I think the other aspect is, if you look at the Catholic Church, you know, that may be a good way to really understand what he's saying in a certain level, in the way of, here's a religion that preaches forgiveness, turning the other cheek, kindness, works, you know, those kinds of things. And yet if you look at the you know, history of Rome, and of the popes, etc., the amount of the way that they used or misused those teachings, and the way power, you know, mm-hmm. became so intoxicating for them, and the way that they abused it, is, you know, I think a pretty good illustration of how you can robe yourself in this.
Yeah.
But if you get swept up in the wrong directions, you can literally take it and utilize it, you know, for ill.
Yeah.
Well, we had the same thing in the Second Temple. We don't need to look. We don't have to look any further than ourselves, our own histories. It's not just the church.
No, I didn't say it was just the church, but I think the church is pretty clear.
Yeah. So to me, I mean, in the same way you guys are saying, this is a really. I mean, I'm trying to. You know, I think back when I saw this, it shook me up, and I'm trying to think back. You know, all my years of learning, how many times did I actually do what he's saying here? You know, before I open the sefer, or before I start learning, to actually think of, you know, what are the things I need to improve on, and now let this help me improve, as opposed to just, okay, this is almost like just like the magical potion, right? Like, I'm just going to learn, I'm going to become more knowledgeable, I'm going to, you know, be able to give a cool shiur, I'm going to be, you know, things like that. But the point here is, you have to be working on something, you have to be in the right place, trying to be a better person, and then the Torah will give you an incredible boost, an incredible place. And something I want to just to point out before we go on is just this does not mean to undermine the power of the Torah in any way. Trust me, the Vilna Gaon was a person who literally just learned Torah 24/7, and it was not going to go into who he was right now, but none of this is meant anyway to undermine the Torah. The same way we're saying that Derech Eretz Kadma the Torah, that Derech Eretz basic decency has to come and be there before the Torah comes into the picture. The same time, there's another statement of Chazal, of the rabbis, that says, "Im ein derech eretz ein Torah." If you don't have basic decency, you don't have Torah. And they say, "Im ein Torah ein derech eretz." If you don't have Torah, you don't have basic decency. So it's kind of a paradox. But the point is here, just to make sure we're clear, this is not meant in any way to undermine the power. The power of the Torah is immense and unparalleled. But it has to be that it's coming into a place of already trying and already working on being in the right place. And to bring this back to where we started, this is what I think Sfiras HaOmer is all about. This is the connection between counting and waiting for the Torah to come, waiting for us to get to the place of Shavuos, of receiving the Torah, the connection between that and the story of Rabbi Akiva's students dying because they didn't treat each other properly, which almost in a sense usurps the character of Sfira. But I don't think it usurps it in an unnatural way. I think it actually is a seamless transition. It's a perfectly natural sequence because what Sfira is all about is it's the preparation that we have to put in, the of working on our basic decency, the way we treat people, that work that we have to put in before we get to the Torah. So Rabbi Akiva's students dying in this time frame because they didn't treat each other properly makes perfect sense to be the focus of our work during this time, which is why a lot of people, you'll see different Lashon Hara campaigns and different things that people try and work on around this time period, because that's what this is about. This is working on our mindset, on our way of treating people before we get all the additional extra boost of the laws and the spirituality and the beauty of a Torah lifestyle. So I want to, for the next 20 minutes or so, I want to learn together just a few basic, simple ideas and suggestions of how we can try and work on this concept, this idea of basic decency, the way we treat people, to try and do a little bit of a tikkun, of a fixing for the tragedy that occurred in this time period of the Rabbi Akiva students, and to put ourselves in the proper place, so that when the Torah comes and it grows us, it nourishes us the way that the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, talked about, we will be something that's ripe for growing in a beautiful way, not something that could be grown in a not so beautiful way. So let's look together at a first suggestion, a basic, just simple idea, to work on Lashon Hara, to work on the way we talk, the way we talk about other people. And I want to start with a mashal, an analogy that I heard from a Rebbe of mine, Rebbe Daniel Katz. It's a bit of a graphic mashal, so I apologize. We'll say it quickly. But he prefaced it with also saying that it's a little bit graphic. But he said he noticed that people often talk about Lashon Hara, and they give muster about Lashon Hara, and they try and give classes, inspiring seminars about Lashon Hara, about working on Lashon Hara, and they focus on the act of the way we speak, of trying to hold ourselves back. There's beautiful campaigns going around of try and take on an hour not to speak, Lashon Hara, different things like that, and it's all great. It's all fantastic. But he said to him, when he hears about people trying to hold themselves back from saying Lashon Hara, he thinks of it as it's as if someone needs to throw up and they're holding themselves back from throwing up. You can't do that. It doesn't work, right? It's a horrible, horrible feeling. To not speak Lashon Hara. To not speak Lashon Hara. When it's there, it's like trying to hold it in, mm-hmm. Right? So it has, the process of working on Lashon Hara actually has to start much earlier. Has to start, he suggested, in the way we see things in the first place, so that we're not about to spit it out. We're not trying to hold it back, but it's that we're actually thinking better things to begin with. So the idea of Lashon Hara, working on Lashon Hara, has to start at a much earlier state at seeing things properly. And at this past week's parsha, I noticed just a few days ago that if you look in source number 6, the pasuk says in Vayikra, in this past week's parsha, Lo selech rachil ba'amecha, that you shouldn't go around gossiping amidst your nation, Lo samar al dam reyecha, you shouldn't stand idly by someone who's drowning, someone who's in a perilous situation. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, your God. Just point out, I think it's interesting. I just noticed this the other day, that it's juxtaposed, that you shouldn't walk around to speak negatively, and then the same, meaning what's the connection between these two psukim? Don't gossip and don't stand idly by someone who's drowning. Why are those two things juxtaposed in one pasuk? So, I mean, this is not our topic right now, but I think it's interesting that it's two verbs, right? Two opposing verbs, right? One of, don't walk around, and that's what I want to focus on in a second, but don't walk around gossiping, and don't stand idly by when someone needs help, meaning, you know, kind of, when are you putting in the energy and the effort, and when are you not? But we have to be able to stand and hold ourselves back sometimes, but then we have to be able to move forward and act in an active way at other times. So I think that maybe that's why it's juxtaposed, but something to think about. But what I want to focus on is exactly this, the verb of lo seilech rachel, don't walk around gossiping. Why does it just say don't gossip? What's the walking around? Why just don't speak lashon hara? Don't speak negatively about people. What's the walking around? What's the emphasis on that Torah?
You're walking around.
It's bad enough you're saying it, but you don't have to go running after it.
Good. Okay, so that's one way you could look at it. Rashi, I think, says something a little bit different. Rashi says, Lo seilech rachil. If you look at source number 6, the second part, Ani omer al shem shekol mishalche midanim umisapri lashon hara, people who sort of instigate bad things and people who speak negatively, holchim bevate re'ehem, l'ragil ma'yir ura. They go around to people's houses to see bad things going on.
They're looking for things
to say, to talk about. So what you were saying is the focus on the walking around is the once you have something to say, now you're walking and spreading it. But Rashi takes it back a step, not forward a step. The walking around is going on the seeking things to talk about. So in the Torah, the emphasis, at least in this pasuk, is the way we look at things, is the stage before speaking, is the stage of what we see, what we are looking at, what we are pursuing. Are we looking at things positively, or are we looking at things as a juicy piece of information to talk about, to spread, to have a good time with? Or are we walking around looking to see positive things in people, looking to see things that we could praise, that we could compliment, that we could help, that we could pitch in with advice, etc.? So I think that's the emphasis here, and when I noticed this, it reminded me of exactly this mashal, this analogy that this Rabbi Katz gave, is that Lashon Hara, work on Lashon Hara has to start earlier, not with what we say, but with what we see. And I think, to me, this reminds me of the pasuk we say every Shabbos morning in Tehillim, Mi ha'ish ha'chafetz chaim, who is the person who desires life? Mi ha'ish ha'chafetz chaim, ohev yamim, who loves days, lir os tov, to see good. And what's the next pasuk? The most famous pasuk about Lashon Hara? Nitzor l'shon chameirah, to hold yourself back, hold back your tongue, your lips, from speaking evil. So what's right before that, holding back your tongue? Liros tov, to see good. What has to come first, if you want to be able to hold yourself back, is that you really shouldn't have to be holding anything back in the first place. It's that you're walking around, if you love life, if you love living, then you want to walk around and you want to see good things. And you want to be liros tov, you want to see things that are positive, not lo seilech rachil, that you're walking around to find out gossip, to find out things that you could talk about in a negative way. And this is Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, his most famous teaching is Torah Resh Pei Bet in Likutei Moran. I want to read a few lines together with you from that. If you look at source number 7. Da, kitzarech ladun es kol adam lekav schus. No, and he starts off, it's a fascinating thing, Rabbi Nachman, in almost every piece of Torah, he starts off with the word da, no. Okay, I mean, obviously, if you're writing a book of information, you're obviously telling me this to know. Why do I have to say da? But the idea is you have to really take a moment to sit with it and to really let it sink in and to contemplate it, to meditate on it, not just to have the information running through your system, but to really absorb it. So da, to really meditate on this. Kitzarach ladon es kol adam l'kafslos. You have to see every person in a positive light. I just had just the other day, I have a chavrusa that I showed up for, and they weren't there. And I tried calling, and they didn't answer, and it was just really frustrating. It was the middle of my day. I had a lot of other things I could be doing, and it took a real chunk out of my day, wasted time. And I was kind of annoyed, you know, thinking that's pretty inconsiderate. And it turned out that the person was sick. They had a virus. I just found out today, literally slept for 24 hours straight. So, but I jumped to conclusions to think that they were just being inconsiderate. They weren't thinking about trying to help me. But that's Don is called Adam Akaslos to try and think favorably of every person in every situation, about Filo Misha Hu Rasha Gamar. But not just in the situation that I just mentioned, even in a more surprising scenario, even when we're talking about a person who is an absolute Rasha, a person who's not very good. Sarach l'chapes v'limtso bo ezmatov. You have to search and find in them something small that's good. And I think, to me, the most striking words here are l'chapes. You have to actually search. I mean, sometimes it's not so apparent. It's not always going to be easy. I mean, we're good at this when it's staring you in the face. But to actually work on trying to see something good in a person, to actually put in an effort. It might be a process. It might not come so quickly, so easily. To put in an effort to try and find something good in them. Sheba oso hama'at, because in that little spark, in that little bit of good, ain't no rasha, they're actually not a bad person. Va'ayidei zeh shemotzei bo ma'at tov, and if you find that good in a person, v'dano so l'kafschus, and you judge them favorably, al'yidei zeh ma'la oso be'emes l'kafschus, you actually can elevate them. V'yucha l'hashivo b'tshuva, and you can actually return them. To do tshuva, to become a better person. Everyone can sense the way we look at each other. And if you look at someone positively, it's good for you, and it's good for the person. The person can actually feel that. They can be taken to a higher place. They can understand that you have high expectations of them, not in a judging way, but in a positive way, that you believe in them, that you see something good in them, you see potential, you see a clean spark, something that's unblemished, and something positive in them. So that's the first, again, simple. These are simple things that are really more refreshers than they are new insights. But the first simple refresher for all of us is to work on the way we see things, not only the way we talk, but actually on the way we see things in the first place. And the second thing I want to focus on is that, and it's connected to this, is how do we see things in a more positive way? Okay, it's nice to say, let's just work on seeing things more positive, but how do we do that? It's not so easy sometimes. You see things negatively. So how do we do that? So for me, I know, thinking in my own life, that there's no question that it's very consistent when I see things positively and when I see things negatively. When I feel good about myself, I can see others positively. When I feel intimidated, I feel insecure, I feel jealous, I feel angry, I feel hurt, whatever it is, then I don't see things so positively. I see more negatives in people. It's very, very consistent. It's actually very simple. It's almost too simple. But it's very simple and very straightforward. The better we feel about ourselves, the more we can see good in others. The more that we struggle with our own self-esteem and our own self-worth, then the more difficult it is to see positive in others. And the Torah hints to this in the most amazing, amazing way. It's something that's really hidden under the surface. I don't know how many people noticed it, but it's in words that we've already mentioned a number of times tonight. The Torah tells us exactly this lesson in a very profound way. Yeah? Dov, what did you say? Yeah? Meaning? Spell it out for us.
You have to see yourself that way first in order to...
Right. Meaning the Pasuk says, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your friend as yourself, which if you think that through, that means that by definition, you will only love your friend as much as you love yourself. The Torah never says love yourself. I mean, it says you should be shmar snafshecha, you should take care of yourself, but it never says love yourself, it says love someone else. But it says it in a way that it's implicitly definitional, that you can only do that if you love yourself. Because v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your friend as you love yourself, means that there's a prerequisite to loving someone else, is that you love yourself. It's an amazing formulation. Yeah.
You could be the same person also.
You can be your own friend. You should love yourself. Yeah, 100%.
Or it's like you said, you, if you only love yourself as much as, you know, love your friend as much as yourself, like you said, if you're in negative mode,
right,
then you end up thinking of your friend negative. If you're in positive mode, you know,
right.
And like you said, like that's
right. So when the Torah tells us to love someone, to see them positively,
right,
it tells it to us in a way that there's a hidden message saying you won't be able to do this if you don't first have a positive sense of self-worth and self-value. Yeah.
Well, some people can love themselves a little too much, though.
So maybe that's why. So maybe that's why the Torah exactly actually tells it to us in the form of an imperative to love others. Mm-hmm. And why doesn't the Torah tell us love yourself and love others? It tells us to love ourselves in the context of telling us to love others. Because they have to be intertwined, they have to be synchronized. they have to be working together. If you look at source number 9, if Cook says this in an amazing way, as he usually does, if you turn the page over, if Cook writes, Kol ma sheyoser yihye ohevis atzmo, the more a person loves themselves, kacha yispashet hatov shebo al kol, the more, to that degree, proportionate to that, your self-love will spread and overflow to everything that's around you. Al-kol ha-sviva, to your entire environment. Al-kol ha-olam, to the whole world. Al-kol ha-havaya, to all of existence and to all of divine existence. Kol ma-shi romim es ercho bifnim, the more that you elevate your own worth, ubachutz, your own self-worth, kein yiromim v'yagbir es ha-or v'hatov ba-olam, so too you will elevate and you will strengthen the light and the good that's in the world. So I think that if we... Was there just light turned on? Or did I just get inspired by reading the quote?
Inspired.
Okay, both. So if we want to work on the way we see things, if we want to be people who are not Selech Rachel Bamech, that are walking around to see negative, but we're people that are walking around to see positively, so the first thing is to see ourselves positively. And I want to just end off with one more small, again, simple reminder, refresher of how to do this. And that is the famous line of the Sefer HaChinuch, which is really a most basic and really, really important fundamental principle in all of Jewish law, in all of Jewish spirituality, in really in all of Judaism. And that is the words, Acharei HaPu'ulos Nimshachos HaLavavos. After your actions, your heart follows. Judaism teaches us that we can't always just rely on our inspiration. We can't always rely on our inner motive, on the meaning we feel from something, on the emotions, on the high of being inspired to take action. We have to sometimes just take action. We have to just be committed to doing the right thing, even when we're not feeling it. And when we do that, the feeling, the inspiration, the meaning will follow. Acharei ha-pu'ulos, after the actions, Nimshachos havavos, the hearts, your inner life is pulled. In the context of, yeah.
I was going to say, I really believe that, because I think, like, if you're in this, whatever, a job or something like that, for me in the classroom, if I had a terrible day, I know I have to go in the next day and just
smile.
Be completely positive, and then the children react to me, not me reacting to the children. We have to always turn it around to that.
And internally also.
Oh, internally.
And that's what he's focusing on. Internally, within ourselves, right? Sometimes we even more naturally think of it with others, but even within ourselves, right? That even when we are not feeling positive, we're not feeling motivated, you have to just take action. You have to just be committed to your values, to your principles, and be disciplined, and then the inspiration and the feeling and the upward movement will hopefully, and as we're promised, will follow. And this is a true psychological phenomenon. Yeah.
We're sort of really taking two polar opposite positions in that we have to work on our own qualities in order for Torah learning to be meaningful and to enable us to grow and develop. And yet at the same time, we also have to sometimes act in order to first to bring along the neshama. So it's almost... diametrically opposed.
100%. Totally. I agree. I think it's paradoxical. I think they're both true. I don't think there's anything mutually exclusive about them. I think it's two different processes that we always have to be trying to undergo. Different times call for different modes. And they're both 100% true, at least for me personally speaking. And I think in Torah sources, that is 100% true. They're both true. Sometimes we are looking to work on our inner lives and let that flow into action. And sometimes we have to take action and let that reverberate inside of us and inspire us. And this is what the Chinuch says, if you look inside in source number 10. Da, ki ha'adam nifal kifi pu'ulosav. You should know that a person is moved after you're awakened, you're affected by your actions. V'libo v'chol machshavosav tamid achar masav shuha osavahem. Your mind, your heart, is always consistently moved by the actions that you take. Im tov im ra, if they're good or if they're bad. V'afilu rasha gamor bilvavo v'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak rakol hayom. Even if you're not such a good person and you have a lot of bad thoughts and you don't know what to do with them. You can't figure out how do I improve. Im yara rucho v'yasim hishtadluso v'osko b'hasmada b'torah mitzvos, and you put all your effort and your focus on doing good things, v'afilu shloshim shamayim, even if at that moment you cannot have proper intention. You're thinking negatively, but you still force yourself to do something positive, to do an action which is positive, even while your mindset it might be in the wrong place. Miyad yinates el hatov. You will immediately or eventually be pulled after that action and be moved towards good. Ubekoach masov yamis hayetzer hara, and your actions will weaken your yetzer hara. Ki achrei hapulos nimshachim halavavos, because after your actions, your heart is pulled. This is what Rav Dessler talks about. He points out that the word ahava has the word ahava's love is the word hav in it. Hav means, anyone know in Aramaic, is hav is give, is to give. If you want to love someone, give to them. The more that you invest in something, the more your heart becomes invested in them. The actions that we take, what we do, affects us. I want to close just by summarizing. I want to close with a tefillah that we could all hopefully say together. So just to close, we started off trying to understand what is Sfiras HaOmer all about. What is Sfiras HaOmer about? And we spoke about the fact that there's three levels. We focused three different layers. We spoke about two, so let's just summarize the two we spoke about. Number one, historically, this is a time period where Rebbe Akiva's students died because they didn't treat each other properly, and that transformed this time period into a time of a certain level of sadness and mourning. We focus on that event. The second thing, really, which way predates that, is the concept of Zman Matan Torah Singh, that these are the days that we have counting up to when we get the Torah from Hashem. What is the connection between those two things? How did Rebbe Akiva's story, in a sense, usurp or take over this time period that doesn't seem fair to the true nature of the time period? And the answer we suggested is Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. To be able to be affected, to be boosted, to reap the beauty and the bracha, the blessings of the Torah, we have to be working on our basic decency, to be in the right place, to be like the earth that's ready to grow in a positive way, so that the rain of the Torah falls down and nourishes us and cultivates us and grows us into a beautiful product. And we spoke about three, that's why this time period is a time to focus on the way we treat people, the way we interact with people, on our basic midos, on our basic interpersonal relationships. We focused on three basic, simple ideas of how we can try and work on that. The first is more than just focusing on holding back what we say, but focusing on how we see things, to see things in a more positive light, to judge things more favorably, to look for positive opportunities, not for negative opportunities. And we said, number two, that the basic place to start working on how we view others is how we view ourselves. Is v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Kamocha has to come first in order to be able to be v'ahavta l'reicha. To be able to love someone else, you have to love yourself first. To have a sense of self-worth and self-appreciation, and then we can see other people more positively. The third thing we spoke about, which as you pointed out, is the other side of things, is that even when we're not feeling positive, when we're not inspired to be good people, is just to take action. To be committed to whatever it is, every day, to have some small act of kindness that you're committed to doing, no matter what, if you're feeling it or if you're not feeling it, or every other day, once a week, whatever it is, once a month, to be committed that I'm scheduled to do this. Even if I'm not in the mood, I'm doing this. This is what I'm committed to, and it's going to affect me in the long run. The small actions lead up, and they build up, and they accumulate into a beautiful product. And then the Torah can come to us on Shavuos and nourish that and allow that to grow. And I want to just end with a quick line from the Arizal. He says that before you daven, this is something that I learned from a siddur I have, but I don't know if it's in most siddurim, so I want to share it with you very quickly. That before you daven, kodem shaha adam yisadet filosof aveis haknesses, before you start davening in shul, mi parshas hakedah ve'eloch, when you start saying the parts before, Sarach shiyakabel alav mitzvas ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. You have to accept upon yourself the mitzvah of loving other Jews, loving other people. V'yachavim lehav kol echad mibnei Yisrael k'nafsho. You have to have in mind to love every person as your own soul. Ki al yizdei zeh tala tefilaso kalula mikol tefilos Yisrael. And then your tefillah will be enwrapped with all the tefillahs of all the Jewish people and ascend to Hashem. V'tucha lalos l'mala v'lasos pri. And then it can truly elevate and come to fruition. And that's why in some sidurim, there's just a quick line you could say before you start davening, Hareini mikabel alai, I accept upon myself, mitzvahs, the mitzvah of v'ahavta l'rech kamocha, to love other Jews, to love other people, to care about people, to see things positively. That's a quick line that the Rizal said we should say before davening. Elimelech of Luzhensk, the Noam Elimelech, wrote a beautiful tefillah. If you look at this is the last thing we're going to do together. If you look at the back of the page, in the bold words, he says the following. It's a beautiful prayer, and it's something you could either say with me, think with me, or just have kavanah for at another time. Avram Fried has a beautiful, beautiful song called Adarabba to these words, which I highly recommend. And it goes as follows: Vasatzi Leinu, and I say this tefillah with in mind Chaim, Yonatan Mordechai Ben Pesha Elka, and all other cholim that are in need of our tefillah. Vasatzi Leinu Mikinas Ish Mireyehu. You should save us from jealousy of another person. Veloyala Kinas Adam Alibenu, and the jealousy of another person should not ascend to our hearts. Velo Kinas Seinu Alachem, and no one else should be jealous of me. Adarabba, and this is where Avram Fried's song starts, called Adarabba. Adarabba, on the exact opposite. Instead of jealousy, tain b'libeinu, put in our hearts, Hashem, shenira kol echad malas chaveirinu, v'lo chesronim, I should only see in every other person their mala, their greatness, their value, v'lo chesronim, not their lack, not their weakness. V'shenedaber kol echad es chaveiru b'derach hayashar v'haratzoi l'fanecha, and we should all speak to each other and about each other in the proper way and the way that is pleasant before you, that is wanted by you. And no one should hate another person, God forbid. And you should strengthen our connection and our love of each other and with each other before you and to you. As is known and revealed to you, that it should all be pleasant and appeasing to you. Hopefully Hashem should help us, that we should fulfill this, and we should come to Shavuos and to Matan Torah as the most perfectly beautiful potential for the Torah to fall on us and nourish us. Thank you all very much.